Good News Ministries of GNM.org. It's the Catholic place for growing your faith. Good News Ministries will provide you with faith-building reflections, virtual retreats, prayer resources, and lots more. All of it is free. Visit GNM.org today. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Thanks so much for downloading our podcast. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries, teaching what the Bible tells us are the best ways to handle money. Do you realize in the Bible there are 2,500 verses that show us how God wants us to handle the gifts that He has provided us? And we teach these biblical principles in our small group Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. You can learn more by going to Compass.
The bottom line is we want to make sure that you live totally debt-free.
My name is Steve Holbrook, and with me, the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, John and Evelyn Bean. So the question I want to throw out, how many robocalls do you receive in a day or a week? Or emails that say a rich uncle passed away in Nigeria and you've inherited tens of millions of dollars? Today, we want to discuss ways to avoid these scams, what to be on the lookout for, and what to do about it. And it's funny, in researching today's topic, we were surprised to learn that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has only been around compiling complaints for just about 8 years. So John and Evelyn, let's share, what are the top categories of these complaints?
The debt collectors remain the top consumer complaint category. That's about 23% of all complaints.
Identity theft was the second biggest category, which I found was kind of surprising, because I would have expected it to be number one, because there's been so many instances of identity theft through all these hack jobs on major data, you know, the data breaches.
Yeah.
And most of the reported types of identity theft are related to credit card fraud and tax fraud. Now, I would have thought that tax fraud would be way down the list. But I guess with all the electronic filing that people can do in today's world, that it makes it easier for people to hack in and, you know, submit your tax return for them.
And they submit your tax return, get the money, and then you go to do yours, and the IRS says, uh-oh.
Yeah. That's one reason why I try to get ours done really fast. You know, not that we're getting any money back.
So, and the third type of most common scam was an imposter scam. Consumers reported losing more money to imposter scams than any other type of fraud, and that totaled about $328 million. An imposter scam is someone pretending to be a government official or a tech support representative. You know, oh, we found a problem on your computer, and I'm going to here to help you. Let me get into your computer. Or a loved one in trouble. Or somebody else pretending to be someone else in order to get you to give them your personal information.
Nearly one in five consumers who reported an imposter scam indicated that they lost money to the fraud. That's amazing, 20%.
So let's talk about how to avoid the scams. I think number one is to secure passwords on your accounts, to have really secure passwords on your accounts.
I think that is probably one of the most important things. And, you know, most passwords are pretty easy to break. People are not very ingenious when they're creating their passwords. I can't tell you how many people use the word password, or they use 0000, or, you know, 12345, or, you know, they just go across the top of the keyboard with all the symbols. Those kinds of things are really easy to crack, and they don't do you too much good.
So one of the ways to build a really secure password is to think of a sentence, such as, I was born on September 13th, 2002 in Abilene, Texas. So that's my sentence. I was born
child bride
on September 13th, 2002 in Abilene, Texas. And then you take the first letter of each word or number.
So that would be I was W, born B, on O, September S, the T, 13th T,
in
I, Abilene A, Texas T, I W B O S T T I A T.
Sounds like a song.
That's my favorite password.
So once you have that, create a password by making some of the letters caps and replacing some of the letters with symbols or numbers that are similar to the letters being replaced. So if you use that logic, John, what would your password be?
Well, that password is IW6, use the 6 for the B, O dollar sign for the S in September, the number 13 for 13th, and T for 2002, because that's a whole bunch of T's there. I in the at sign for the A, and then the T for Texas. And maybe you make the T for Texas a capital and the I for I a capital. So you've got capitals on each end and lowercase throughout the rest of it.
So the good thing about that is it's not a real word. It can't be found in a dictionary. It's a mixture of letters, numbers, and symbols, and it's meaningful to you, and it's not something people can easily discover, like your birth date or your phone number or your street address. So number one way to avoid scammers is to make your password secure.
What about the use of a password manager, like a LastPass or programs like this that they'll generate passwords for you?
I think that's a good idea as long as you understand how to use it. Okay. And you know the best way to use it. So I would, in fact, we started doing that because we had so many passwords between both of our personal things plus all the ministry stuff, and it's greatly simplified our lives.
Yes, it has. And the thing of it is, you got to trust it, and you got to figure out, you have to be familiar enough with it so that you can access the password manager from multiple devices.
Right.
Okay. And you have to understand how to do that, because it can get frustrating, because if you allow the password manager to create your passwords, you know, you're never going to remember them. And it can get really frustrating trying to log into something where you don't have the password manager open and that kind of stuff. So it's a whole process, a change in the way that you function.
Right.
And you have to adapt to that. And it takes, you know, it just doesn't happen overnight. I mean, it didn't for us. It was a real process.
Yeah, we went like from our spreadsheet to the password manager over a period of a couple months.
So when you're developing, so let's say you're not using a password manager, you have a different password for each and every account.
Mm-hmm. You should.
They're not similar.
They're not like 01, 02, 03.
Right, so yes. They're completely different, and that's yeah. Great practice. Now, the other thing on passwords is to write it down. Because to commit those passwords to memory, you, I'm sure, have them written down on a spreadsheet.
Can't. No, we don't. Not anymore.
Not with a password manager, we don't write them down.
No, no, no. If I'm saying, if you don't use a password manager, make sure you have don't commit to memory, because that will fail miserably.
Yeah. Yes.
And then you'll really get frustrated.
Yeah.
Well, you have to change your password every time you try to log in, and that's going to be even worse. And it'll be frustrating because it's going to take you forever to log into any given site.
Yeah. Now, what about the recommendation of changing or updating your passwords every... whatever, 30 days, 60 days?
Well, I've never done that. I'm really bad about doing that. But it probably is a good idea, depending on the type of account. I think on the more secure accounts, like your bank account or your credit card, you want to do it more often than on something like a non-secure account.
Yeah. And I think with a password manager, you can do that. And it's much easier to do. And it's not an automatic process. I suppose in some password managers, it could be where, you know, it just goes in and changes everything every 30 days or whatnot.
And the second way to protect yourself is to be cautious about phone calls. You know, you guys were talking about phone calls from people saying that your social security number is being turned off. So don't believe your caller ID, because technology makes it easy for scammers to fake caller ID information.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And I can't tell you how many calls I get that are robocalls. I mean, I know the government's supposed to be going to do something about that, but
the government's supposed to be doing something about that for the last 10 years.
Yeah, we've had all kinds of different ways of solving that problem, and none of them have worked yet.
Well, see, if I don't recognize the number 90% of the time, I won't even answer the call, because I figure if it's important, they're going to leave me a voicemail message. And if they don't leave a voicemail, then I don't want to know.
That's how it doesn't come up in my contacts or name I don't answer. The one thing about robocalls illegally is you hear silence. They're waiting for 1 second of sound from you. So if you don't say anything, it'll deactivate. It'll stop.
So it's waiting for you to talk first because they know somebody's on the line.
Yeah. And I tell Audrey that when she picks up the phone, don't say anything.
That's a good
idea. If it is for you, they'll start talking right away.
Well, you know, I've been very, very persistent about blocking phone numbers that are robocalls. And I get many fewer robocalls than you do.
I block them all too, Evelyn.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you seem like you get a lot more than I do.
Well, I can't help that.
Your numbers on bathroom walls, places.
It's just your personality. They'd rather talk to John.
Well, you know, and if somebody calls you and says they're from a credit card company or the government, and they're asking you for personal information like your credit card number that they're supposed to have, don't give it to them.
Yeah.
We're not suggesting that you be skeptical on every call that you receive. We just want you to be aware of some of the activities that are out there. You're listening to Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries. Our goal is to help you become totally debt-free and continue to live a debt-free life. How can we help you? Go to compasscatholic.org. Take a look at our Bible studies. We have a variety of Bible studies that we offer. And if you have an interest in one or more of the Bible studies for your parish or even in your home with neighbors, family, and friends, just fill out the contact form there on the webpage and we'll be back in touch with you. That web address again is compasscatholic.org. Well, today, John and Evelyn and I are sharing tips to avoid being scammed. So, Evelyn, we went through protecting your passwords, the phony phone calls. What other activities should we be on the alert for?
Don't pay up front for a promise. If someone asks you to pay in advance, if they're going to help you with debt relief, or if there's a credit card or a loan offer or mortgage assistance or finding a job for you, don't pay up front.
Yeah, they might even say that you've won a prize. Congratulations! But first, you have to pay taxes or fees. Guess what?
Once they get your money.
Yeah, that's probably a scam. Yeah,
you're probably going to take the money and disappear.
That's right. And, you know, you have to consider how you pay for things. Credit cards have significant fraud protection built in, but some payment methods really don't, like wiring money through services like Western Union or MoneyGram. It's risky because it's almost impossible to get your money back. And that's true also for the reloadable kinds of cards like Money Pack and Reload It, or even gift cards from places like iTunes and Google Play. If you put money on there and you give that number to somebody, you know, you just gave them all your money that you put on that card. So government offices and honest companies, focus on honest, don't require you to use those types of payment methods.
You know, one of the ways I think the scammers influence us is that there's a lot of pressure to give personal information. They put a lot of pressure on you when you're on the phone, and it's real easy to just spit out the information they're asking for. But before you give up your money or your personal information, slow down and talk to somebody you trust. Because the scammers want you to make a decision in a hurry, and they might even try to threaten you. So slow down, check out their story. Do an online search, consult an expert, talk to a friend, check out Better Business Bureau. Just slow down before you start giving out any personal information.
And remember, you have the ultimate power of hanging up. That's all you have to do. Hang up. Don't deposit checks that you get that you don't know anything about.
Oh, this is we'll give you a check for this much money, but then you have to wire the money back to me.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Yeah, that's not a good thing. And banks will give you the money under the condition that that check clears if it's under X number of dollars, and it varies by bank. You know, it only takes a couple of days for a check to clear. If you go out and spend all that money right away and that check doesn't clear, it bounces, the bank's coming back to you for that money. And they're going to get it. They're going to take it out of your account. And if you don't have that much money in your account anymore because you took it out to spend it because you got all this free money, then it's gone. They're going to, not only that, or they're going to charge you a fee
for all the stuff that you overdrafted. So one of the things you can do to prevent yourself from getting scammed is to sign up for free scam alerts from the FTC at ftc.gov/scams. That's Federal Trade Commission, ftc.gov/scams.
And if you do that, you're going to get the latest tips and advice about scams sent right to your inbox.
And if you spot a scam, report it to that website at ftc.gov/complaint. So there's one that gives you the scams, and there's one where you can register complaints.
And when you do that, you're helping the FTC and other law enforcement agencies investigate scams and bring the crooks to justice. You know, you're playing a part. You got a role to play there.
You know, the other thing is emails. We get so many emails, I guess probably because we have an email address on our website. Mm-hmm. We are constantly getting emails from people trying to give us free loan offers or free money or wanting to talk to us about our credit. And it's just so frustrating to get all those emails every day.
I tell you, the biggest danger is people receiving emails with attachments.
Oh, yeah.
And then opening the attachments.
Yes.
Never, never, never open up an email from someone you don't know. And because that's going to be dangerous. In fact, even if there's people on the email that you know, I would call them first to make sure that they sent you an email.
Well, the other thing is you can have the right email. You can have the right name with a different email address,
right. Mm-hmm.
Which you really have to pay attention to, because just because it says it's from John Bean doesn't mean somebody didn't use your name and have a different email address.
Right. The at part is different. Yeah.
Well, the at part is different, or it's like Joe Blow at something or another instead of John Bean, when you actually look at the email address, not the name on the email. So
very
be really careful.
And very dangerous to open up an attachment.
Well, and the other thing is if they have a website link in the email, mm-hmm. if I want to see more information about the website, I will type it into my browser, not click on the link that they sent me. The other way that I think a lot of people get scammed is free trial offers. You know, they're going to give you a free trial offer for something, and you can cancel at any time. And then once they get your credit card, they never go away.
Yeah, good luck.
So before you agree to any types of free trial offers, research the company and read the cancellation policy, and always review your monthly credit card statements for charges that you don't recognize. Be cautious. It's up to you to protect yourself.
If they want your credit card information before you ever get the product,
I
understand when you buy something, you're buying something and you're giving them your credit card information. That's one thing, but to sign up for stuff and then it's going to come to you once a month and do this, and that. And I'm just real skeptical of those kinds of things. Because, you know, if you buy something, you can shut it off because you've made a one-time purchase. But when it's going on month after month, they get really hard to shut off. And that's a nasty thing.
You know, one of the things we've done to protect ourselves is we froze our credit. Because unless you're applying for a mortgage or a car loan or a credit card or some other type of loan, there's really no reason to allow inquiries against your credit.
Yeah. Now, this is different. If you've taken the class before, you read any of our books, you know that, you know, 30 years ago, we froze our credit, too.
Oh, when we put our credit cards in the bank.
We put credit cards in the bag and put them in a pail of water and froze the pail. But
you were before your time.
We were way ahead of our time. But this is different. This is actually contacting the credit agencies, Experian and TransUnion and Equifax, and having them freeze your credit. So nobody, no bank, no car company, nobody can make an inquiry against your account. And it used to be that you had to pay. If you've got that in your mind, wipe it out, because that's not true anymore. With all the credit breaches that have occurred, all of the credit companies now will allow you to freeze your credit for free. And you can't just freeze it with one of them and expect the other two to honor it, because it won't happen that way. So when you freeze your credit, you go online, you get to the credit reporting agency, and you have to go each one, all three of them, and put a freeze on. And there's a process. Make sure you keep track and write down all the different numbers that they give you, because there's a 20-digit transaction number, and you've got to have a password and an email and those kinds of things. Write that stuff down and keep it where it's safe, because there's going to come a time when you want to unfreeze your credit because you want to make a purchase or get a loan or something like that. We hope you're not getting loans, but people want to see what your credit's like. You're going to have to unfreeze one of them so they can go there and check you out. So just keep track of all that stuff. But that's the best way, that protection. Nobody's going to open a bank account in your name that you don't know about. They're not going to open up a credit card in your name that you don't know about. I really am highly in favor of that.
Well, we ran into a situation where we were buying a large appliance and we wanted to use the store's credit card so that we got a 10% or a 15% discount. And
yes,
we forgot that we froze our credit. And so the guy did, the cashier did a check on our credit and said, you know, it's not approved. You can't get approved. And we're like, you know, our credit is stellar. Why would we not be approved? This is ridiculous. And then we finally remembered that we froze our credit.
Oh, so she's not able to see that your credit's been frozen.
No.
No, they just say it's denied.
Yeah, okay. It's just denied. Yeah. So if we were scammers, they would have been denied on opening an account in our name. So that's a great way to make it more difficult for identity thieves to open accounts in your name.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that one.
Yep. So Proverbs 24:6 says, "For by strategy war is waged, and victory depends on many counselors."
So you can wage war on the people or the organizations out there who are trying to take advantage of you. And ask for help from those people that you trust, and you should be able to safeguard your financial life. And we hope these ideas will help you keep your information safe and protect you from all those scammers that want to get into your financial affairs.
A lot of excellent suggestions. In fact, Evelyn has written a blog on this topic, and you can read it by going to compasscatholic.org. And the title that you're looking for is Don't Get Scammed. You know, a lot of the websites that she referred to during the show are listed in her blogs. Again, compasscatholic.org. Look for the blog, Don't Get Scammed. And before we leave you today, we have a number of emails that we'd like to answer. So let's get started. John and Evelyn, I have promised to give someone financial assistance for a certain period of time as they get back on their feet. However, I have since learned that they are handling their money very unwisely. What should I do?
You know, we struggle with this a lot because there's a lot of people we coach, and we never give them money, but we get very frustrated when they're not doing what we think they should be doing to help themselves.
You know, it sounds like you've gotten this information secondhand. So I think the best thing for you to do is just to sit down with this person that you've said you were going to help and find out what's really going on. If you think that they are acting unwisely, then you need to be prepared to set down some parameters about the amount of help that you're willing to provide and really what you expect from them in return.
And I think anytime you're providing help like that to someone, you have every right to expect something in return. They really should be managing that money that you're giving them. Yes. It shouldn't just be a handout that they can spend any way they want.
They need to be a good steward.
Yes.
All right, John and Evelyn, here's another email. Going to have to put your thinking cap on for this one. My house loan is down to under $69,000 at 4% interest. I have $46,000 in savings. My six-month emergency savings would equal about $16,000 of that $46,000. Would it be a good idea to take the remaining $30,000 and pay towards the principal to reduce the amount of interest I will pay? Or do you recommend putting that into a money market or a savings deposit?
I'd put the $30,000 towards the mortgage and then really, really, really focus on prepaying the balance of that mortgage each month until it's totally paid off. You are so close to becoming totally debt-free. You know, you'll be that way once you get that mortgage paid off.
You know, I'd almost consider taking the money and splitting it between the mortgage payoff and retirement savings, because the earlier you start saving for retirement, the better off you are. And based on what this person's retirement savings is, which we don't know, it may be better to put some money aside for retirement so that that nest egg can keep building.
Well, that's definitely a possibility. The one thing that they need to remember is that once they are debt-free, they'll be able to give more generously, and they'll be able to replenish their savings very quickly.
All right, John and Evelyn, this one's a good one, because when we're out speaking, we get asked this question quite a bit. It says, how do I go about determining what kind of mortgage payment I can afford?
Man, stepping back and looking at what you can actually afford or what you're comfortable with for a mortgage payment is such a good thing to do before you actually start looking for a house. Here's the rule of thumb when it comes to the maximum you should budget for a mortgage payment. It's the total of all your housing costs, including the mortgage payment, insurance, real estate taxes, utilities, lawn care, homeowners association, repairs, maintenance, furniture, et cetera, should not be over 40% of your income.
Wow, that's a whole lot of stuff. And realistically speaking, if you calculate all that, that's going to lower the amount of the mortgage that you can afford to about 20% of your income. Because the other half, 20% is half of the 40, the other half is going to be encapsulated by all those other things that come along with home ownership.
And once you calculate how much you can afford, start prepaying the mortgage so you can get rid of it.
Absolutely.
All right, John and Evelyn, we have time to answer one more email. This one, some good news. I'm getting married. Congratulations. And I would like to pay cash for some land that we're thinking of buying to build a home. I have a car loan, but no other debt. What do you think?
It's important to pay off the auto loan first. If you look at the Compass Money Map, which is available on compasscatholic.org, there are 7 destinations on the journey to financial freedom. The first, the earlier destination, is paying off your auto loans. That's destination 3. While at destination 5, you buy your home. So you and your future wife are going to be a whole lot healthier financially, especially as a newly married couple, if you become debt-free and save as much as you can for the home purchase. And from a personal standpoint, buying property without your spouse is probably not a good thing to do.
No. That's a big mistake. Very, very bad.
Yeah, very bad idea. John and Evelyn, thanks so much as always. Hey, if you have a question or two for John and Evelyn, maybe you have a financial challenge in your life and you'd like some advice, please send your email, your questions to ask@compasscatholic.org. That's ask@compasscatholic.org. For John and Evelyn Bean, thank you so much for downloading this podcast. And remember, we have a brand new one for you each and every Wednesday morning, bright and early. Simply go to compasscatholic.org, click on podcast, and there it will be, plus an archive of all the podcasts that we've done over the last couple of years. This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministries.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.